I was just curious as what you guys thought about what's impossible about creating community in Beijing. That's all.
Oh, man.
I don't know. I mean, that it would be so easy to make generalizations about that right now, but one of the largest problems, there's just such a difference between different generations, you know, right now, especially between older people who still, I mean, like, the people who were the last people who participated in the Long March are dying now, you know what I mean? And you saw people who experienced the Great Leap Forward. You saw a generation of people who lost their educations due to the Cultural Revolution. Then you have like the new wave of people who saw the first benefits of like the Geiger Kaifeng of the opening, and then you have
the
sort
one
of
child only generation.
Then you have the one child only generation, and now you have another generation that is just being completely hit. I think one of the largest changes that has occurred in China is within communications technologies, and you have the mobile and internet generation now, and in many ways, I think one of the most freakish quality about, I don't want to use the word freakish, but strange qualities about China.
Unique,
you know, is how do you resolve these really, I don't want to call them completely, you know, disparate in a way, but, you know, they're really, in some ways, disjointing and conflicting, you know, ideas what community is, of what recreation is, of, you know, sort of more fundamental, what I would perceive as fundamental approaches to living, like how you want to live, like what is comfort, what is entertainment, what, you know, sort of are sometimes I consider more fundamental bonds of community are at such ends. And then in right now we're also at a time when, you know, nationalism is supposed to be at its highest, when that's all supposed to come together. And I also think what's going to be the most interesting, everyone's going to be here, came here for the Olympics, but I think the most interesting time in Beijing is going to be what happens after the Olympics, and seeing how that falls out over the next year, you know. And the government can no longer say, we need to maintain social stability for the Olympics, so we must keep things as is.
That's what everyone's saying. It's going to be put up a number of sort of high-level, high-profile firings and policy shifts until after the Olympics.
Oh, yeah.
Huge economic fallout is going to, huge economic shifts are going to happen probably in the fall as well. Currency fluctuations, it's all going to sort of come to a head. But, like, how does that affect community building? I think you're going to increasingly see Beijing, Chinese community formed based on the lens of socioeconomics versus family.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be a huge shift that disrupts the sort of social fabric as much as any of the policy regulations that had to do with birth or with just general cultural illusionary, whatever it was, whatever political shifts were going on. I think actually a growing middle class and a growing upper class are going to have a greater long-term effect on how community is built in China than really anything, any political top-down policies that have happened over the past.
This just comes
years.
From something I read today, but I read an interview with an economist for our magazine, and he's saying that basically they're going to probably do away with the hukou system entirely in the next few years.
Really?
And
the
they want the hukou, like
oh,
the whole like they want to build Beijing into a super city. And so right now in the northeast, they have 1 million empty apartments that they're planning to fill in the next 3 years or so, just from people. They're going to try to urbanize the hell out of China, basically, and concentrate everyone into the cities.
But the thing is, along with the map, I mean, they want 15 new Shanghais across the interior.
Yeah, right.
They want to do it. And
building 90 new airports.
Yeah, airports, basketball arenas, everything. But the thing is that which is most detrimental to the massive level of urban development is that they're going to hit a huge head wall very soon in terms of natural resource use.
Or employment.
Employment.
Don't worry, it's fine.
Okay. Natural resource use, employment, pollution, energy use, and you know...
But cities are actually better for pollution than...
Well, I mean, but the thing is that China cannot, in terms of its current vision of what an urban landscape
mm-hmm.
looks like, is not sustainable for 15 more Shanghais across. The world can't handle it.
Yeah.
I mean, they've already stripped most of Southeast Asia and Russia and you know, Siberia, and it's, you know, the idea of maintaining 1.2 billion people in China living like we do in the United States it's impossible.
That's just my favorite thing about China, is it's like the horror of seeing another United States, you know?
Yeah. And that's sort of the consumer model that the Communist Party, you know, it's the carrot that they use to maintain control in a large way,
mm-hmm.
is sort of the promise of that house with three cars. But you
mm-hmm.
can't have, you know, two cars per people in China at one point.
Yeah.
It's...
But the majority of people in China don't think they're getting two cars.
Why do you think they're here? Why do you think they travel all the way from Sichuan and live here for 9 months?
Mm-hmm.
You know? Because
they're poor.
They're
and
poor.
They need to work.
And, you know, but the thing... And they need
it's
to work.
The same
and they
like
need
Africa.
Money.
Like,
but the thing
like,
is...
Nobody's like... Nobody... Like, the migrant workers in Africa aren't, like, going, like... to Nairobi from Kisumu because they're like, yo, and maybe I'll like work for 9 months and then get a car.
No, they see.
Home, like their families are able to live very well.
No.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the thing is, and they see people living in the cities at this extremely high level of consumption, and they live in a freaking communist country, and they still have these mores of their own like socialist revolution that these guys put up with throughout the 60s and 70s. And that promise of sort of increased material wealth is what drives a lot of it. And when they don't start meeting it, there's going to be a lot of social... There's already tons of social unrest in the countryside.
Yeah.
And a lot of it stems from that dissatisfaction. I mean, I don't know if you've been in like the countryside in like Henan or in Hubei and some of these places. It's really depressing. And a lot of them are like really unhappy. You know, and the carrot that the Communist Party has put forth for them has been sort of this really luxurious and comfortable materialist lifestyle that they sort of promised, but not everyone's going to be able to get that at all.
But I'm sorry. You really think that like the poor people here are different than poor people in the rest of the world? They think that they're about to get two cars.
They don't think that. I mean, that's what they're hoping for. I mean, that's sort of like their vision of what it means to be like modern and successful.
This is like 小康社会.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like
to be rich is to be
a
glorious.
A top-down imposed ideal of what it means to be like equitable and successful
with free moderns that started with what it was a sewing machine, a
refrigerator, a sewing machine, a refrigerator.
And TV was the second wave. The cell phone was the third. I can't remember what the other one was. But you had this as that consumer and sort of wealth and material wealth was associated with a higher level of well-being. And so, and happiness, directly equated with happiness.
Yeah.
This is, and so that's that whole, while it's not as sort of, clearly sort of stated by the state now, it's certainly part of it. And that's carried on through the generations of what material wealth means. And how it can be equated with happiness. I don't think you see that elsewhere. I don't think you have a top-down sort of checklist, top-down dictated checklist of things that, like, make you happy and then make you successful.
Actually, you did in Japan, but they had the three C's, you know, like, it was what? Like, cooler for refrigerator,
yeah.
Color television. And then it went through all the decades. They had the new three lists.
And for the, I mean, at the same time, over the past 20 years, there's sort of been an equal rise between urban dwellers and rural dwellers in terms of how they were sort of moving up together in a way, but over the past 5 years, urban dwellers have just started skyrocketing in terms of the difference, and without any sort of significant sort of raise in quality of living in for like 800 million other people.
And actually right outside of the major metropolitan areas,
yeah.
There's been a dramatic decline in the quality of life because largely their water tables dried out now, or resources are just skipping over them from like the very rural poor to the major cities. So, and that's frustrating because then the have-not is much more visible when you're 100 kilometers away from Beijing.
Well, you have to live around it for 9 months. I mean,
when
you come in these migratory workers and they're living on site, you know, in these horrible squats, you know, and this is like, I was going and photographing all these guys who were living in this little hovel on this construction site. It's like right off of Wangfujing, you know, which is like the center of consumption in Beijing. And, you know, and then I went home with them over Tunjie, over their spring festival to like Henan. And, you know, just like trying to talk, I just sometimes just did not understand how, and a lot of them don't, just like brook this ridiculous difference in quality of life in. And especially at a time when things just don't seem to be improving. And they live 9 months away from their family. And it's a huge source of social unrest, and it's not reported widely at all. I mean,
Colin can tell you about that.
Yeah.
Stories of social unrest being suppressed.
Yeah, but it's, and that's the thing, is like no one knows, really, the extent, and, you know, and that's something that they're trying to negotiate, but the model that they're trying to negotiate with is by trying to build 15 more Shanghais.
Mm-hmm.
But that process of building 15 new Shanghais across the interior technically can create wealth, but they're going
so
to meet some... exacerbates all the existing problems, especially those stemming from natural resources and pollution and, you know... Poverty and waste that.
Well, isn't this the whole? I mean, isn't it? Is anyone? Have you guys read Neville Marz's new book at all? I don't know. Sort of. Isn't that what it's all about? Aren't we
sort of?
Just,
I mean, he gets a little abstract. I mean.
Isn't that what he's talking about? Has anyone read it? I haven't read it yet.
What do you guys? Are you guys laughing because you've read it or?
We worked on it.
It's like, I'm just curious because it seems like I've only seen like brief bits of it, and you guys would know better than me.
There's a copy just
about?
Inside if you want to take a look. Yeah.
It's here. It's,
there's
I
this.
Was, like,
you see it there on
yeah,
the floor?
Yeah.
Okay.
Can't miss it. It's the biggest book in any room. But I would just be curious if we're just sort of regurgitating things that he talks about, or if he talks about them at all, or what he's talking about, because certainly some of the statistics we've thrown around are very prominently displayed in the first two pages.
I mean, well, this, if you go into any bookstore in the United States, you look at the China shelf, every single book is like, this is China's downfall, or this is China's great rise. I mean, it's the greatest source, I mean, of sort of academic speculation and rhetoric known to man. And it's because nobody knows, especially like how the high levels of the Politburo work, and nobody knows how policy is implemented or in how it's so carried out in such a fractured manner. And
but in that same time, that points exactly to the problems of China. The people in the Politburo are actually quite smart and quite aware of what's going on. And it becomes fractured as you go down the levels
of
government.
It's
your to like
that I was helping.
It's a huge thing to consider, and it's really going to come to fore after, I mean, this coming fall, and I think it's the next year. But the thing is that you know, we have a huge capacity for brinksmanship with a lot of this, in terms of creating just complete disasters. And I personally feel China really needs, I don't want to use radical, like really needs to rethink how people live in urban areas in a huge way. And it's really important. And if you look at the direction of most development and the shoddiness of it in general, it's just a disaster waiting to happen. In a strange way, God, that book is big.